Beard, Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, two volunteer nurses tell us how they're helping the state's vaccination rollout. First, President Joe Biden and members of his administration are continuing to sell the plan to boost the country's infrastructure and the plan to pay for it, including raising the corporate tax rate.
I will not impose any tax increases on people making less than $400,000 a year. If others have ideas out there on how to pay for this investment without violating that rule, they should come forward. There's all kinds of opportunities. Just list all the tax breaks that I find difficult to explain.
That's Biden speaking this afternoon about what he and the administration are calling the American Jobs Plan. It's the week in Washington. We'll check out the latest on the infrastructure plan and its fate in Congress. We also got some new guidelines from the CDC last week about fully vaccinated people and travel, while in many places in the country, COVID-19 cases are rising again. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How much do you want to see the federal government put into infrastructure redevelopment, if anything? And what does infrastructure mean to you? Is it just roads and bridges and railroads and such, or should it include broadband and so-called human infrastructure? Should the administration and Congress go big or small? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Francesca Chambers is White House correspondent from McClatchy, D.C. Francesca, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been hearing, Francesca, about this infrastructure plan for a while. What kind of things did we hear today from the administration about how they are hoping to pay for these changes?
Well, you really summed it up at the top when you talked about the debate about what is infrastructure and how should you pay for it. And today we heard from President Biden that he believes that's what is in his plan, if it wasn't obvious already, is infrastructure. He said for Republicans who are arguing that these items like childcare and the electric grid and water and schools, for those Republicans who were saying that's not infrastructure, he's trying to really make the case that it is. And he says that when Congress is back in session next week, he'll be making that case, as well as administration, to Republicans who are pushing back against his definition.
And we heard from the president there, one way he does not want to pay for it is on income taxes for Americans making $400,000 a year or less, that he doesn't want to raise that, he says. We heard from the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen about some of the things they do want to do, a lot of it having to do with corporate tax changes. What kind of things are they looking at there?
So it's important to note that there are two infrastructure proposals, one of which the president has put forward and the other of which the administration says is forthcoming and it is not put forward yet. This is important because the one that he has put forward, which handles a lot of those roads and bridges and traditional infrastructure, as well as other things, that he proposes to pay for by increasing the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%. Now, the second part of his infrastructure package, which again, he hasn't put forward yet, is where you could start to see the income taxes being raised. Now, the president and the White House have emphasized that no one making less than $400,000 a year is going to have their taxes raised. However, Republicans are already starting to argue that in order to pay for the entire thing, the president would have to do more than just raise taxes on anyone making above that amount. So certainly there's going to be a debate over that in Washington, too, once we see what the president's plan is.
The president can propose these plans. Of course, Congress has to sign off on them. And that can mean needing 60 votes in the Senate, meaning Republicans would have to sign on. Or there's reconciliation. And there's some news on that from the world-famous Senate parliamentarian. What are we hearing this week?
Well, not only does Congress have to sign off on them, Congress would have to introduce a bill, I may also add, which hasn't done because it's been in recess, to even make the president's proposals into legislative form. So that would be the number one thing that has to happen here. But then, as you noted, to get it through the Senate with a bare majority, they would need to use that process called reconciliation or get rid of the filibuster, which does have that 60 vote threshold. Now, they've signaled that they're not ready to move off the filibuster. That's something the president does not want them to do. And so now the Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, his interpretation is that they could use that budget reconciliation process that they also use to pass COVID relief to move this. Of course, the White House is still saying that they'd like to get bipartisan support for it, that they don't want to do it that way. But from what we've heard from Republicans so far, Republicans are not signing on to the president's proposal.
We're talking about some of the top stories in national politics, including right now infrastructure plans from the president and their potential fate in Congress. Francesca Chambers is with us, White House correspondent for McClatchy, D.C. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see a big infrastructure plan pass in Congress? What would you want to see in it? What would you like to see it look like? And how would you like it to be paid for? Are there places where you think corporate taxes could go up? Higher income Americans taxes could go up? If not those, then what would you like to see done? And what is infrastructure to you? What kind of things fall under that? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us, ideas@WPR.org. Francesca, I know there's no bill yet and no Congress right now in session, but there are questions, it sounds like, over some of this plan that has been outlined by the Biden administration, whether it would even get that bare majority of Democrats. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin saying he's maybe not on board with the corporate tax increase to 28%. So that isn't even a slam dunk, is it?
Well, and Joe Manchin has said that he would like to see it at something a little bit more like 25%. He sees that as more of a middle ground. But what the Biden administration is arguing is that 28%, they already see that as a middle ground. The corporate tax rate used to be 35% before Republicans cut it. Republican-only passed bill, cut it in 2017. That was when it was reduced down to 21%. So the Biden administration arguing they've already reached that middle ground. But the fact of the matter is that in the Senate, even if they were to use reconciliation, they would need to have Joe Manchin's vote as well as that of other moderate Democrats. They would not be able to afford to lose a single Democratic vote if they don't get any Republicans. And again, we have not heard of any Republican support for this bill yet, or rather this proposal. Yeah.
Right. And the president has said it sounds like he's open to negotiation. Does it sound like there's an appetite for genuine negotiation in Congress with the Biden plan as a starting point or not?
Well, certainly the White House has emphasized that repeatedly this week, that if Republicans have ideas that they're willing to discuss them. And we saw last week Roy Blunt of Missouri, he was putting forward some ideas. You know, one thing that he said was that you could just put forward traditional infrastructure in one bill, and you would probably get bipartisan support for that, including from Republicans. And then what Biden could do is put all the other things that Republicans are opposing on the grounds that they're not traditional infrastructure, you could put that into another bill and pass that, you know, with just Democratic support. So that's the first thing we've heard from Republicans. But again, they're in recess this week. They're back in their congressional districts. I would expect that you'll hear more from them on what they'd like to see next week.
What have we heard from the Biden administration on why they haven't done that? Had your straight up roads and stuff that generally politicians from both parties seem to like, and then trying the other stuff in its own deal?
Well, already what they're looking at for their second package would be quite big on its face. There could possibly be expanding the child tax credit in that. They could be funding paid family leave. Some of these other things that they've described and Democrats have described as more of a care economy in that sort of a bill. So my understanding of it is that they tried to break up all these big ideas into two different packages. And when you talk about some of these things that wouldn't have as much Republican support, you do run the risk, if you're the Biden administration, of getting your infrastructure package that has the roads and the bridges and everything else in it, but then not getting any of those other priorities. If they put some of that in this bill, perhaps they will end up getting some support from Republicans. Perhaps they will be able to get this bill through, maybe not the other one. But that's always the political risk that you run.
We're talking to Francesca Chambers from McClatchy, D.C. It's the week in Washington. We're looking at new developments around the president's infrastructure plans and where that could go in Congress. Coming up, we'll check out guidance from the CDC around COVID-19 and the administration's handling of the pandemic. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the latest on this infrastructure plan? These infrastructure plans, I should say, from the Biden administration, would you like to see them pass Congress? Do you like the idea of corporate tax increases, an increase in the rate to help pay for it. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Also, with the CDC talking about people who are fully vaccinated and travel advisories, what are you confused about? What do you want to hear from the CDC? What does vaccination mean for your own travel plans, maybe this summer or beyond? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's our week in Washington, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, including infrastructure and coming up CDC advisories for people who have been vaccinated. Francesca Chambers stays with us, McClatchy, D.C. White House correspondent. You could join in on either of those topics at 800-642-1234 if you like, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Francesca, you've been following this news now from the CDC. They've been gradually issuing guidelines and advisories for people who have been fully vaccinated. Now, travel. What is the latest from the CDC on vaccines and travel?
For fully vaccinated individuals, the CDC said on Friday that they can travel with a low risk to themselves. They don't need to quarantine anymore after they've traveled places. And importantly, it said that if you're traveling, you don't need to take that COVID test unless, for instance, it's required by another country before getting on an airplane. So certainly that's probably good news to many Americans as they try to figure out what they'll be doing this summer, to know that once they're fully vaccinated, they don't need to take the COVID test and they don't need to quarantine. That being said, the CDC said for Americans who were coming back from foreign countries that they would still need to take that COVID test before coming back. And they recommend several days after traveling to some of those countries where we know that there are other variants of the coronavirus, that they should take a test several days after returning to America.
There was some confusion, Francesca, when the CDC said, yeah, probably safe to travel if you're vaccinated. But I think it was the CDC director said, yeah, but maybe don't travel. What am I selling them short here? Is that generally what they said?
No, that's accurate. And that's really a reflection of the difficulty that the CDC has here, because for all of the Americans who aren't fully vaccinated, they've either had one shot or they've had no shot so far. They don't want to be seen as encouraging them to travel or be seen as easing restrictions on travel, given the rising cases that we've seen in the United States. At the same time, she said that the science does show that people who are fully vaccinated do have a low risk to themselves. So they really are trying to have these two different things that they're dealing with here for the vaccinated individuals on travel, while still sending the message they want to send on travel to people who haven't been fully vaccinated. It's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah, this guidance comes, vaccines, you know, they're rolling out, more and more people getting vaccinated, but we're seeing rates of COVID going up a little, raising concerns that, hey, are we in a fourth COVID surge? I don't know. How is the CDC trying to like sell both of those messages at the same time?
Well, right. And that was why, you know, you haven't seen some of the other guidance that could be or should be rather coming from the CDC for vaccinated individuals on other activities. You know, we still haven't seen anything related to the workplace. We have not seen any guidance related to when we'll be able to have big groups gathering again. To this point, they've only spoken about small groups gathering. And that is what President Biden had said that we would be able to do by 4th of July, is to have small groups gathering. So there's certainly a lot more guidance that we expect to be coming that will tell us more about how we can return to some sort of normal after this, once people are vaccinated.
And you've been covering this and following this under the Trump administration and now under the Biden administration. What kind of differences have you observed in how the CDC and scientists and others are talking about the disease?
Well, you know, we have these briefings several times a week with the scientific, you know, officials, the CDC, whether that's Dr. Anthony Fauci, that involves White House officials, and they're all done virtually currently for reporters. So that's one change that we've seen that's different. under the Trump administration, there was a point where we were having briefings in the briefing room with some of these officials every day at a certain point or every few days. But sometimes it wasn't always them taking the questions. Of course, when the president was there, a lot of people had questions for the president himself. Other times, President Trump would jump in and answer questions himself, even if the question was potentially directed at a scientist. So this White House has chosen to address that by just having briefings with just these health officials that take place on Monday, Wednesday, Friday every week. Everyone knows when they are. They're roughly the same time on those days where just the health questions are answered. And then, of course, they have the White House press briefing where a range of questions are taken on a near daily basis unless the president is traveling.
Another big question has been about vaccine rates. There were accusations that the Biden administration kind of lowballed a little bit, saying they're going to shoot for, what was it, a million vaccines a day or something like that. Or I can't remember the exact numbers, but saying they set their bar too low and they've exceeded it. And should they be still setting it higher? Have they been talking about that at these briefings?
So initially, the president said he wanted to have 100 million shots in his first 100 days. And then he came back and said that they would be able to meet 200 shots in his first 100 days. So they have increased the bar. And certainly they are now doing more shots, more than a million shots a day. That's what it would have taken at this point. But there have been questions about racial equity in terms of the shots, whether or not these are getting in the arms of people who are most disproportionately impacted by COVID and have been dying at from higher rates at it. And it's really something that this administration has acknowledged that they've struggled with, right? The difference between wanting to get as many shots as they can in as many people's arms, but also making sure that it's done in a fair and equitable way. And they have, since getting their hands on the data that showed them that it wasn't being done in a fair and equitable way, had to adjust their strategy to try and get more shots to rural communities, to the elderly, to, you know, some people who maybe don't have transportation. They have now made a goal of having a place where you can get vaccinated within 5 miles of your home for people who don't necessarily live near a CVS or a Walgreens. So that's the phase of the strategy that they're in now. And they're also trying to convince people who've been hesitant or skeptical about getting the vaccine that they should also do so again, so that the country can return to normal.
We're talking to Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent from McClatchy, D.C., looking at some of the top stories in national politics right now, looking at the Biden administration and COVID-19 related issues. And Francesca, it's been just over a week or so. I think the president himself had been asking for governors and local leaders and others to keep or reinstate things like mask mandates. Again, with that potential for a fourth surge getting out ahead of vaccinations, what has the White House message been to those state and local leaders?
Right. They do not want them to lift those restrictions. And in fact, we heard the Secretary of Commerce today say from the White House podium that if anything, they would want them to speed up their vaccination rates, that that's what they believe that they should be. This administration believes that they should be focusing on is trying to get enough, as much vaccine to their residents as possible. And then they can start lifting the restrictions versus the other way around. So that has been this White House's message to governors and mayors in the city and states around the country.
I want to touch briefly on a couple issues before we run out of time, Francesca. There's been concern from some gun control advocates who were hoping that Biden would move faster on the issue, that he has not. I'm seeing at least tweets that the president and the attorney general, Merrick Garland, will be talking about that soon. What do we know about what we may hear?
It is our expectation that tomorrow President Biden will sign at least one executive order that takes a look at this issue. What could be in that is that he could require homemade guns to that don't necessarily have a serial number on them to have to go through background checks for you to be able to have those sorts of firearms. Again, we don't know too many other details about what it is he's likely to sign tomorrow. Reporters haven't been briefed on that yet.
What other issues are you watching for, Francesca? Infrastructure, big, obviously COVID-19, huge. What things are maybe on the back burner that you're watching for in the weeks to come?
Well, first is the president's budget. It's something that presidents are required to put forward. And while they don't have the matter of law behind them, they certainly signal what a president's priorities are. And so we haven't seen a budget yet from President Biden, and his administration has said one's coming, and maybe even a skinny version where they don't do the whole thing. They just do some things. And so that will really tell us a lot more about where they plan to proceed after he gets through these early initiatives like infrastructure that he wanted to do. So that's one thing that's absolutely on the radar. And within that, that will tell us a lot more about some things like what I've been covering. I've been covering things about the historically Black colleges and universities and whether or not the president will fulfill a campaign promise to send more than billion dollars to them to try and help with some of the issues that they're having. So those are some of the things that his budget will help us to see which of his campaign promises he plans to fulfill this year and which ones we might have to wait till next year for.
And finally, with Congress coming back next week, infrastructure, I imagine they'll be talking about. What else is at the top of their agenda?
The infrastructure proposal is absolutely going to be the talk of next week in Washington. It won't just be infrastructure week this week. It'll be infrastructure week likely next week as well. The White House, again, has said that they'll be meeting with both Republicans and Democrats, not just their legislative staff, but the president's also expected to host Republicans at the White House next week as well. So what we'll be on the lookout for is what kinds of proposals, as you noted, do Republicans put forward to pay for some of this infrastructure if they don't want an increase in the corporate tax rate, if they don't want to see any increases on high income earners.
Francesca, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much. I look forward to talking to you about this again.
And it'll probably still be infrastructure week. That's Francesca Chambers, White House correspondent from McClatchy, D.C. We talked to her for our weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics, including this week, as with many weeks, infrastructure and the Biden administration's response to COVID-19. Coming up after the news, we'll talk to Wisconsin nurses who are helping people get vaccinated against COVID-19, hear about their experiences on the ground, actually working with people and delivering those shots. Remember, you can follow Wisconsin Public Radio not just on your old-fashioned radio. Get the WPR app and listen on your phone or listen on your computer at WPR.org and look for our Ideas Network live stream there. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on The Morning Show, Amtrak released a vision for passenger rail in the future that would include expansions here in Wisconsin. But don't book those tickets quite yet. Find out what could change and what it would take to get there. That's tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, volunteers and part-time healthcare workers have played a big part in Wisconsin's pandemic response, including most recently the vaccine rollout. We'll meet two of those vaccinators right now, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a volunteer who's helping the state's vaccine rollout? What's it been like? What do you want to know from two nurses who have been vaccinating people against COVID-19? Do you want to give a shout-out to the person who vaccinated you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Our guests now are two nurses who spend their time these days vaccinating people against COVID-19. Wendy Reed is a nurse at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison and with Sharing Resources Worldwide, an organization that donates medical supplies and provides free surgeries around the world. She volunteers through the Wisconsin Emergency Assistance Volunteer Registry to vaccinate people at clinics in southern Wisconsin. Wendy, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Also with us, Leah Haig, usually a nurse at the Wisconsin School for the Deaf in Delavan. She currently works with the National Guard mobile vaccination team, helping the state with its vaccine rollout. Leah, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, I understand you're both taking breaks from vaccinating folks today to talk to us. Wendy, let's start with you. How has today been?
Well, today was Fast and Furious when I first got to the center there in Baraboo at the Wellness Center. And then it kind of slowed off as the day kind of went on. But I like it when it's busy. Makes you feel like you're making an impact.
And Leah, have you seen a steady stream of customers in the last few days?
Yeah, it's been pretty busy. Today I'm in Winnebago County. That public health department's fantastic. We're doing second doses today, so a little bit faster pace, just getting through people since they already know what to expect.
And Leah, you usually work as a school nurse. How has your work changed the pandemic and led to this current gig with providing vaccines?
Yeah, it's been a change in pace, but I've really, really enjoyed it. Our school has been virtual, so not a lot for a nurse to do when we're virtual. So being able to get out and be front lines helping vaccinate people has been really fantastic. And you just see it in the people's eyes when they come that they're so happy and thankful that you're there. It's been great.
And Wendy, can you talk about what led you to get involved in giving vaccines?
Well, typically I do quite a bit of volunteering every year. Usually between January through March, I'm out of the country, actually, doing the sharing resources kind of gig. And since I'm not doing that right now, it's kind of like, what will I do with my time? So that's when I signed up with Weaver in January, and I loved every minute of vaccinating people. It's such a joyful occasion for people. They're just happy.
We're talking to Wendy Reed and Leah Haig. They are both nurses who are vaccinating people in Wisconsin. And I haven't gotten to my point in line yet. Wendy, what kind of questions are you getting from people as they show up? Or are they just ready to get there and get it done?
Yeah, people are just so thankful. Right away, they're like, thank you for being here, thank you for giving me this vaccine. I think people are just ready to this going and get it behind them. And of course, they're concerned about, you know, how am I going to feel after this? Will I be sick? And we just kind of give them advice of just drinking lots of water. I tell them, you know, grab something of your favorite drink on your way home. So if you start feeling bad, you have something right there.
And Leah, for those of us like me who haven't gotten the shot yet, what should we know about the process? What are we in for when we show up?
Usually when you show up, if you're by appointment, they usually register you in. You fill out some paperwork, go through stuff like, have you had a vaccine in the last 14 days? Your allergies, if you've had COVID, those kind of questions. You've probably seen something like that. Now that everybody's eligible, they don't really have, you know, the eligibility checklist to go through. So I would reach out to your doctor's office, the public health. They're great. Anything in your community, usually you can find where you can get your vaccine.
And Wendy, where all have you been so far in doing vaccines? You're going from place to place, I believe.
I am. So far I've been up in Menasha, over in Milwaukee, Elkhorn, Baraboo. And I also do two clinics a week for St. Mary's Hospital in their in-hospital clinic.
Is it all day vaccinating, Wendy, or do you get to see the sights while you're on the road?
Well, I'm usually in a hurry to kind of get there because they're usually starting early in the morning. So I'm like, okay, so it's up early going. And I always just feel like I can't get fast enough to start my day and to set up my place where I'm going to start vaccinating at. And it just takes a few minutes to kind of get all that. And I mean, really to find the building and that kind of stuff. So sometimes it's a little stressful kind of getting there. But once you're in the building, it's like, oh, I'm here and I'm ready to work.
And Leah, what stamps have you added to your Wisconsin travel passport while giving shots?
I have been to Oshkosh, so the Winnebago County Public Health, Baraboo, that's Sauk County Public Health, Janesville, the Rock County Public Health, Milwaukee, and Kenosha, all kind of all over. And let me tell you, it's so nice. We're so welcomed when we come in by everybody, the staff, and they're so grateful to have us, and we're grateful to be there. It's a great experience.
In just a little bit, we're going to talk to someone who organizes some of these volunteer efforts. I want to hear from each of you. If there is, Wendy, a healthcare provider listening, somebody who is qualified to give people shots, And if they're thinking, oh, maybe I could volunteer, what would you say to encourage them to give it a try?
I would say do it. Just as we start to ramp up here now that everybody's eligible, I would encourage you to try to go to Weaver site through the Department of Health Services and get up there and get out there. I mean, not only do we need nurses and, you know, doctors and pharmacists, we just need general people that can help other people transition through, you know, go through this line, now go over here, now we're going to have you wait and sit. So we really need all kinds of people.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Leah, have you seen a lot of people like that, volunteers who help with the, I guess, the logistics and the flow, not just the people giving the actual shots?
Yes. Like when we're in a big site, like if we're doing 1,000 vaccines a day or something, we need those extra people like opening doors, telling people which direction to go and which table they need to see first, second, and then bring them to the vaccinators. So really anybody could offer their assistance, reach out to their public health or doctor's office to see if they need volunteers.
And Wendy, can you talk about the rewards you get from volunteering with this, the vaccination effort, and some of the other volunteer projects you mentioned earlier?
Well, I mean, I can't say enough, you know, the biggest reward is to have a skill that can be used in many different ways, not only just vaccinating, but also when I go to out of the country, especially when I go down to Honduras, and I'm helping Honduran children, you know, work through large surgeries, small surgeries, just the benefit. And every time I think I go to a clinic here in the United States, it's always, I take away a piece of somebody who said something to me that was like, wow, that meant a lot to me. And people are just great, and they're so happy to have people, you know, taking care of them and willing to do it.
And Leah, it sounds like you're enjoying your work doing these vaccinations, but I imagine you're looking forward to getting back and working with the kids again at the Wisconsin School for the Deaf in Delavan. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I am. Those kids, I'm so excited to be able to see them soon, use my skills in sign language again. I've only had to use it one time so far while I'm vaccinating. So anybody that needs any sign language skills to get them through the vaccination process, I'm here along with my coworkers. We're ready to help.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Leah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yep. Thank you.
And Wendy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Enjoyed it. Have a good day.
You too. And thanks to both of our guests and everybody else working on this process around the state. We've been talking to Wendy Reed, nurse at St. Mary's Hospital in Madison. She volunteers through the Wisconsin Emergency Assistance Volunteer Registry to vaccinate people at clinics around southern Wisconsin. And Leah Haig, usually a nurse at the Wisconsin School for the Deaf in Delavan. She currently works with the National Guard mobile vaccination team, helping the state with its vaccination rollout. We're going to keep talking about volunteers getting involved in the vaccine process, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you volunteered during the pandemic, especially with some part of the health process, maybe giving vaccines yourself or one of those other volunteers Wendy and Leah were just telling us about, helping make sure the logistics flow smoothly? Have you been part of the National Guard vaccination team? Or if you have been vaccinated, want to share your appreciation to the people who are doing the work there? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We just heard from two nurses working on COVID-19 vaccinations here in Wisconsin. Now we'll take a look at the wider effort and the role that volunteers are playing. Rahama Bauman is a program officer for AmeriCorps Serve Wisconsin. She's the lead volunteer coordinator for the Department of Health Services mobile vaccination team. Rahama, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, can you talk about the role that volunteers are playing in this vaccine effort?
Well, so many roles. I don't think that there's really just one. So for me directly, I am leading a team of four individuals who are coordinating volunteer vaccinators for the state mobile vaccination teams. And these teams are requested by the local health departments to assist with their vaccination clinics. And right now we've got volunteers that are filling those vaccinator roles from the Weaver Registry, from the state employees that are registered nurses, and also the UW system. We have campuses engaged with students and faculty that are supporting the vaccination efforts across Wisconsin. And that's just one small piece of the overall puzzle when it comes to volunteers working on this whole entire initiative. We've got volunteers that are involved in logistics across the state, supporting the different sites, Team Rubicon, United Ways, Red Cross. They're all volunteering at the local level really to help with the logistics piece of those sites to be able to function.
And when the call went out, Rahama, was there a big response? Have a lot of people been showing up to help at in all those jobs?
Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, I feel very honored to have this role and be able to coordinate these individuals that are so eager to be involved to assist Wisconsin, their local communities and individuals that surround them. It's blown me away, to be honest with you.
And now this vaccine effort is ramping up. The numbers of available vaccines are going up. Eligibility getting bigger and bigger. Is that driving a need for more volunteers now to keep up with that pace?
Yes, definitely. As each FEMA site opens, as the community clinics are still ongoing, I know that there's a lot of fatigue around COVID, and we can all kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. And this is where we really need to come together and really assist our communities out.
So if somebody's out there listening right now and thinking, hey, I could do, you know, I can give shots or I can do all the other stuff that needs to be done. What are some of the best ways that they can reach out and find the best match for their skills?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you asked that. So volunteerwisconsin.org is the first step to look at the overall volunteer needs. It's a state page that organizations can post specifically what they need. And there is a part of the website that is specifically for COVID type response activities. And then we also have the Weaver registry, weaverwi.org. And you can sign up there to actually provide vaccinations if you're a licensed healthcare professional. And if you're not a licensed healthcare professional, that does give you the opportunity to sign up to provide the supportive type roles.
We're talking with Rahama Bauman, Program Officer for AmeriCorps Serve Wisconsin. She's the lead volunteer coordinator for the DHS Mobile Vaccination Team. And Rahama, had people been playing volunteer roles during the pandemic even before we had these vaccines in hand?
Yes. It blew me away at last March, a year ago, and everybody's still actively engaged. And a year ago, when everything shut down, we had individuals calling to ask where they could volunteer at and to help their community, sustain their community and the needs. So volunteers have really played a huge role since the beginning of the pandemic. We've had over 1,200 volunteer projects that were identified as COVID-19 response on the Volunteer Wisconsin website. And those were all supported by volunteers within this past year. It's just been crazy. AmeriCorps alone, our AmeriCorps members had over 500,000 hours of service specifically on COVID-19 activities. It's been, like I said, just crazy. I feel so grateful that I live in a state like Wisconsin.
So are you hoping that this drive to get volunteers now is going to lead to people being more interested in volunteering even, and hopefully this is soon, even post-COVID?
I really hope so. I really think that as the negative of the pandemic has also created so much of a positive when it comes to realizing that it takes more than just an individual to make things happen. You have to come together as organizations, as communities, to figure out how to best meet the needs that arise surrounding you. And I think that as a state, we've been more collaborative on a level that hasn't been seen before.
I just got a note that our caller line had a hiccup. If you tried to call in and let us know about your volunteer experience with vaccinations, try again, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Apologies if you didn't get through when you tried. Still love to hear from you if you can call really quickly. So is there a particular need in a particular part of the state, Rahama, right now, where volunteers are especially in high demand?
Honestly, anywhere in your community, you'll probably find a need. The largest needs are the larger sites that require more support. So in the metropolitan areas, but our rural communities need just as much assistance.
And for rural communities in particular, I know the mobile sites, part of the goal there was to get to places where we didn't have, maybe the big hospitals, like in the bigger cities. How big a role has that played in the vaccination effort?
I would say it's played a big role. We have at least 14 missions a week, if not more. Probably I can estimate around 40 to 80 vaccinators each week is what we're coordinating for the volunteer piece. And it's been steady since January, and it's only grown. So I really think that the mobile vaccination teams has been very beneficial.
All right. Now that our caller lines are working, I want to give a caller a try. Glenn is on the line in Chicago. Glenn, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Anybody that can step up and volunteer, if you can do anything. I mean, they need people from directing traffic, getting them in the doors, helping elderly get places, the whole operation. The nurses, we call them the stabbers. I'm sorry, I've done this for 7 days, so we get kind of cynical about it. But they're the main thing. But they need, for every stabber, you need five other people to get them to them. And the volunteers make these systems work. Jefferson County did a tremendous job. Milwaukee did a tremendous job. Here in Chicago, they're doing a tremendous job at the Veterans Center today. I can't tell you how fulfilling it is to do something like this to help people out. And I encourage everybody to please step up, give it a day, see if you like it. If you don't come back.
Well, and Glenn, you're volunteering with the vaccination sites now. Had you been volunteering before that?
Yes. I worked with the food banks when this first started out. And then, are you saying in general?
Oh, no, with COVID, yeah.
Yes. Once I became semi-retired, I had more time for it. It became a very important part of my life.
Glenn, thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks for the volunteer work. You're doing it. And Rahama, you heard it right there. Just the, I don't know, he sounds very fulfilled, very excited to be part of this effort.
Yes, it's amazing and it's great. And like I said, it's been an honor to be in the position that I've had to help facilitate individuals really taking ownership of their communities and knowing that they are part of the larger effort.
And remind us again, people want to sign up. What's that Weaver website that you were talking about?
Yeah, so that's weavrwi.org. And then to see the overall volunteer needs that are posted by organizations, that's volunteerwisconsin, all spelled out, .org.
All right. Well, Glenn, thanks again for that call. And Rahama, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Rahama Bauman, a program officer for AmeriCorps Serve Wisconsin. She's the lead volunteer coordinator for the DHS mobile vaccination team. Just a little while ago, we heard from two nurses, Wendy Reed and Leah Haig, who have been administering vaccinations around the state. Still time for you to share your volunteer story. If you've been working on the vaccination effort, whether as a, what did Glenn call him, stabber? Or one of the support staff at those sites, let us know. Send us an email, ideas@WPR.org, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know what you're doing and how it's going. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, some companies may require proof of COVID vaccinations in the future for things like travel, international or otherwise, maybe going to a ball game, who knows? But there are no federal documents in the works. We'll look at the idea of vaccine passports and you can tell us what you think. Amanda Ripley is back with us to share lessons from conflicts around the world that could help us bridge the divided political landscape here in the U.S. We'll talk about her new book, High Conflict. And streaming TV and binge watching have been a big part of COVID-19 entertainment and also stress management. A TV writer shares some suggestions for some great low-stress TV watching, and you could share your favorites. That's tomorrow here on Central Time. Last year on the show, we heard from an executive with a jigsaw puzzle company who told us they were having a hard time keeping up with pandemic demand. Things are better now, I think, but at the time, people were stocking up on puzzles as a great at-home activity for when you couldn't go out and do stuff. Apparently, a lot of people took the opportunity to get into the hobby, including some unexpected people, like me. Historically, I have not been a jigsaw puzzle kind of guy. I'm the one who sits down for a few minutes, fiddles with pieces, gets frustrated, and moves on. One, spatial relations, not my strong suit. Also, spotting subtle differences in color, not my thing. Like I had these shoes once that I thought were gray, but my wife said were brown. Everybody agreed with her. I think they're really brown. Two, patience, also not my strong suit. If I'm not good at something, I can be quick to get frustrated and move on. I'm working on that. But, weirdly, I just saw this Kickstarter for some new kind of cool 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzles, and I took the plunge. When they came in, like, September or something, my wife and I cracked them open, and I got hooked. And then I started to understand the sort of systematic puzzle brain that you have to get into to do these is on my mind now because we just finished this really fiendishly complicated 1,000-piece one that I kind of regretted starting. But we stuck with it, and we got it done. Maybe I'll post a picture on the Twitter. You could do that, too. Send us a picture of the puzzle you're working on right now. Tweet us at Central Time WPR. Putting the pieces together, this is Central Time on the Ideas Network.